Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Stirring the Cauldron on the Para-X Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hey, Merry Meet everybody, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. My guest tonight is author Amy Blackthorn, and we're going to be talking about her latest book, Blackthorn's Botanical Brews. Now, Amy's been called an arcane horticulturist for her lifetime work with magical plants, and I'm not distracted except that the cat's trying to eat the mic wire, sorry. She has a certification in aromatherapy and incorporates her experience in traditional witchcraft with her horticultural studies. Amy also teaches hoodoo, and through her company, Blackthorn Hoodoo Blends, she creates tea based on old hoodoo formulas, and I can't wait to talk about the herbal potions, the magical teas, and the spirited libations. So without keeping me talking, Amy, hello.
Come in. How you doing? How's things? I missed your face.
Yeah, no kidding. It's been a while, but boy, it's worth waiting for when I hear you have a new book, my ears prick up and I get all excited. it's funny. I posted a picture on Facebook last week that said, never underestimate a woman with a cauldron. And as you said in your introduction in your book, most people do imagine witches standing in front of a bubbling cauldron, brewing all sorts of mysterious potions. And that's kind of what Botanical Brews is about, incorporating botanical magic into our lives by way of libation and potions, right?
Absolutely. The number of people who asked me when I did Blackthorn's Botanical Magic, when is the tea book and when is the potions book, was not small. So after playing with the incenses in Sacred Smoke and getting my creative juices flowing, I had to make a potions book. I had to get my magical teas into book form and really empower people to make their own magical tea blends. You know, it's something that we all can do, and it's something that we don't give ourselves enough credit for.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things in the book that you say that we can do that we wouldn't normally think about it, and you make it sound so simple. You did, you know, with the Blackthorn Hoodoo Blends, I mean, obviously this book was probably the next step, the next logical step, I guess. And you've incorporated a whole bunch of stuff in it. So let's begin by talking about potions. I mean, the word is mysterious to some people, but potions by definition is pretty matter-of-fact simple. And you said in the beginning of the book that most people won't even touch upon the subject out of fear of allergies, lawsuits, unintentional poisoning, which are three very good reasons to back away. But you're taking a different approach. I mean, instead of just writing a book of recipes, you're teaching about what potions are, what the purpose they serve, how to safely make them. So what are potions?
Potions are a beverage, just about any kind of beverage, but what sets them apart from just your ordinary tea or soda is the fact that you've imbued it with its own magical energy. We can imbue just about anything. Even plain water can become a potion by focusing our intent and using the inherent energy in our own bodies or in the earth to imbue these fabulous things that we're drinking to nourish our bodies, to magically nourish them as well. If you look at apple juice, I mean, the magical equivalents of the apple plant itself, the way that their apples associated with Venus, you can really take that love potion to a next level just by enjoying some cider from down the street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's not, you know, people tend to complicate things that they don't know about. And so, there's a good question from the chat room that popped in. Are all potions magical?
Yes. By their nature, the magic is inherent in each of the ingredients that's used, that goes into our individual brews. What we're doing is we're taking those ingredients that are already there and we're understanding what they add to our magical melange, our magical mix there. You can take anything because all of our materials are made from magical ingredients. Even your sodas have a basis in nature. Even if it's a high fructose corn syrup, you have the energy of corn. You just have to tease apart the little threads that make up what you're using and what you're ingesting and figure out how to add a little bit of extra magic to it.
Mm-hmm. And intent and magic is very important. But intent in anything that we do, mundane or magical, it's very important. You talk about all the basics of magic in the book, and I think even in the real world, the regular world, the mundane world, whatever you want to call it, lots of what people do is magical, whether they recognize it or not. Just as there are many ways to define love, the same goes kind of for magic. And I think everyone on Earth works a little magic every day. And I'm bringing this up because this book isn't just for witches or other magical folks, is it?
No, it's really not. I've had so many bartenders contact me and say, look, I've been working behind the bar for X number of years, and this really gave me a different way to approach what my regular old-fashioned or my regular Bloody Marys, and a way to bring that experience to my client. Whether they believe in magic or not is beside the point. They can really increase the ambiance just by setting the place, setting the table for the client to accept your magic. It's about creating that experience. And one of my favorite ones to illustrate that was my, what did I call it? We had a Bloody Mary a Molotov cocktail. It's a Bloody Mary made with Pepar vodka. So if you need to just burn it all down, you can have a nice Bloody Mary and let go of some of the things that are causing a problem. But it's just about creating that ambiance for the client, whether or not you are in your local neighborhood bar or you're in a specialty shop.
Well, is it sort of like cooking? I mean, people say that the magic in cooking and make a good cook is the love you put into it and the understanding you put into it. And that kind of goes for this, too. I think
you're absolutely right. When people take the time to set the place, apply the garnishes, and really allow themselves to practice their art, you get a beautiful meal. Even if it's just, you know, a box mac and cheese with a little bit of cheese and some extra garnish, it's the extra steps that you take that really gives you the way to dig in and let someone experience your love for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's really important. But I think that's, again, why people think, well, I'm not magical, I'm not a witch, I can't do stuff. But whatever you do with intent and love and positivity, you're making magic. And that doesn't mean, for those who just got, you're not going to have a black pointy hat on your head when you wake up in the morning and you won't learn to cackle. Okay, I promise that. All right. And interestingly enough, we're talking about potions, and someone in the chat room says, I love potions. I'm having one right now.
Fantastic.
I know. Dare I ask? You can, Swampy, you can put it up if you want. I just thought that was really kind of nice. All right. In the meantime, you outline the magical uses for many traditional beverage ingredients, kind of turning a regular plain old drink into a magical brew. And that also goes for things as simple as tea or lemonade to alcoholic beverages. So suppose somebody wants to turn their everyday morning tea into a potion. How would they get started?
Well, there's two ways. One, you can just accept the tea in whatever form it comes. Some people like to grab their bagged tea because they're half asleep and don't have, you know, the attention to measure. So grab your tea bag, grab your accoutrement, grab those, and really see those as your ritual implements. Your mug is no longer a mug. It is a chalice ready to accept your magic. Placing the water inside the mug, pouring out that love and that attention that you have for yourself. Placing the tea, whether it's in a bag or it's an infuser, really do each step with intention. It doesn't have to take long. It just needs that time and attention that you deserve. It's not just blearily scooping out coffee or tea in the morning. It's really recognizing that you are a part of the divine is part of you, and that you deserve to have that reverence for yourself. Just as we revere you, allow yourself to accept some of that love and devotion for yourself. It's not selfish, it's self-forward.
Mm-hmm. And it's also like preparing the space that you do it too. I mean, there are people who in the morning just don't see things right, or there are people who are a little lazy who toss their sweater on the counter, didn't hang it up. So there is something about also having that space, kind of a little sacred space, even though it's just to make some tea, that which you would think would be just really normal, right?
Absolutely. A friend of mine does the most amazing things. She has a cart that she sets outside for one for tea and one for coffee, and she creates these beautiful stations that look like altars, and they really are. And there's the coffee, and there's the hot water pot, and there's each individual little tin, little statues of gods and goddesses. Mm-hmm. She has created a space reserved for that reverence. It's not piled up with the mail and the keys and the phone and the junk from whenever you're dropping when you're coming in the house. It's set aside for you, the person who lives inside, not the person who has to worry about the groceries and the dog and the car going into the shop. The you who reveres and honors yourself and your, whether or not you invoke deities, your time and your space is sacred.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of, when you do that, it puts a whole new slant on it. You're not just making tea. You're doing a process and something that makes you feel good to do. It's hard to explain to maybe some people that don't quite understand it, but we're not making an altar because it's a religious thing, and but there's something about, I think everybody in their own homes has a space that they like better than anything else. It could be a whole room. It could be just a corner of a room. But when you go to that particular space, you feel good. You're comfortable. You can kind of, like that. And I think that's the same thing when you're cooking or brewing or whatever, just to have that feeling that everything is like, oh my God, this is really nice. I'm glad to be here. You know, this is going to be good.
It's so. That one spot where you know everything is going to be okay. And for those of us who are avid readers like myself, it could be a chair under a lamp. You know, you just know that when you sit down with your book and your cup of tea or your cup of coffee, nothing can touch you in that spot. That, you know, whether you are atheist, agnostic, or you're practicing a religion, it doesn't matter. You know that that spot is sacred throughout the house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we all need to, I mean, just in general, we all need to find one spot. Even if you live in one room, you know, there's that one corner that you're really going to like. I think it's really important for people to have that because it is kind of a haven. Even if it looks normal to everybody else, it's your haven.
Yeah, I get a lot of questions from beginning witches who are looking for ways to set up altars in spaces that maybe they share with a roommate, maybe they share it with parents or loved ones, and they're not really ready to be out about their spiritual identity. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't have to have a sign on it that says a witch lives here. It could just be, you know, a little statue or a candle or, you know, everybody loves Yankee Candle. Just grab something that speaks to you.
Yeah. And wherever you can do it. I mean, right next to my desk, I have a bookcase. And because of the cat, I can't put up an altar. I mean, he would be playing hockey and kickball and everything else, right? So I took one of the shelves and from the bookcase, and my altar is in the bookcase. And it's safe, and, you know, people can come by and see, and, oh, okay, there's an altar. But it's not waving a flag or anything. It's just the right place to have it, to make it, it its own little sacred space without, you know, getting beaten up by a cat. So, yeah, I mean, people think sometimes you have to go through all these different channels. Oh, I got to make this great, and I got to do this right, and it has to be this and this and this and this, and that's not true. Do what your gut tells you, because it usually points you in the right direction.
Yeah, I had a poor soul contact me last week. They were living with their parents. They were of a different faith and had forbidden them from erecting an altar. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, so I had to take my altar down. Is Hecate going to be mad at me? I said, Pumpkin, the gods aren't mad at you. They know that you have outside circumstances that prevent you from being as public as you would like. And this is just a temporary thing. All things change. All things flow. It's going to be okay. You can have whatever space you like when you have your very own space. But no one's going to be mad at you if you can't have the Cathedral of St. Mark in your living room.
Exactly. All right. This is funny. Remember we said that somebody in the chat room was having a potion and we asked what it was. Well, funny, you should have mentioned what you mentioned, because he's having a Bloody Mary.
Fantastic.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I like that. All right. Now, we have allies in the kitchen. Now, who might they be?
The best and the easiest allies to get a hold of are the fruits and vegetables that are sitting on your counter right now. Mm. The most fruits, not all, but most fruits have an association with Venus, because when you look at how fruit is created, a fruit is pollinated, so there's a union of male and female, and that results in the fruit, which in most cases carries some sort of seed to procreate for the next generation. So it's a very sensual theme that can really be incorporated when you look at fruits and vegetables right there, available anytime.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to mention too that most things in the book are potions, but there are edible things, recipes in here too. So just throwing that in, it just came to mind.
If you get a chance, make that cheesecake, because boy, God.
You killed me with that one. I mean, I looked at that and I thought, damn it, I want it now. Yeah, I mean, I don't know where you got the recipes, but oh, brother, I mean, some of them are just like amazing, absolutely amazing. I mean, the drinks look good too, but it was just the cheesecake I was going to mention earlier. And I'm going to have to make it. And then I'm going to have to, like, give you the stink eye, because it's going to be so good, I'm going to have to make it more than once. So, you know, forewarned is forearmed. That's all I got to say.
When I worked at a shop in the mall, we had a 4th of July party and a Christmas party, and that was mostly it. I made the cocoa-rubbed pork tenderloin in the apple cider reduction for our 4th of July picnic one year. And there was a literal fight over this, because it was so good. I actually sliced it real thin and just brought the little slider rolls and let people make themselves little sandwiches, and they made me promise to make it for pretty much every picnic after that.
Well, I saw something in the book too that you said, I mean, because obviously you love to cook and obviously you're good at it, and so hopefully down the line you're going to come up out with a cookbook. Because whatever's in here, if that's just the icing on the cake, I mean, oh boy. But it's just amazing the way that you put things together. And both the libations and the food stuff. I mean, it was just crazy. Crazy good. I wasn't expecting to drool when I was reading the book. So, you know, one thing, though, which is interesting, let's get back to potions and stuff. We shouldn't overlook the tools of the trade. I mean, there are bar tools and then there are witches' tools, and some of them are interchangeable, aren't they?
They really are. When we look at, as magical practitioners, we think about the altar space as a sacred place where you can work your magic. And when you look at the tarot and the magician is standing there, he's got his cup, his pentacle, his wand, and his sword. Everything's laid out just so, and it's so easy to remind people that each of those things has a magical equivalent and a bar equivalent. Mm-hmm. So you can look at the zesters and the little paring knives and your cutting boards. Those are your magical implements. That's where you're creating this potion that's going to change your life or the life of someone you love, someone who's has access to this magic that you've created.
Mm-hmm. And there's a whole chapter on this. I mean, for example, you've got the wand as a muddler, depending on what drink you're making. The chalice is glassware and spoons. The athame, knives, drippers, and zesters. The pentacle is cutting board. And bar cabinet is your altar space. I mean, these are things that are so simple, and people will either overlook it or not realize it when you read it, go, really? Yeah. And, you know, when you're talking about the muddler, I'm thinking of a mojito, and I'm in my head, I'm seeing the lime being squished and the mint and, you know, whatever. And yeah, why not? I mean, you don't need to go out and get a million things to do any of this that you're talking about. It's really simple and really common sense. And again, to have a whole chapter on it is kind of amazing, too, because, you know, people think, okay, well, I can do this and this and this. But, I mean, when you talk about the chalice and the glassware and spoons, you're talking about beer mugs and brandy snifters and, you know, champagne saucers and all that kind of stuff. And I just opened up the book, and the first recipe that came to was the corpse reviver.
Mm.
I love that.
Have you ever had one?
No.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, I'll now I'm going to have to do that. Okay, wait, let me look. It is, I got to move my glasses, Cointreau, lemon juice, Lily Blanc, gin, and a splash of absinthe. Wow. And you only need, okay, so those are the ingredients. And then for the tools, you need a champagne saucer, a cocktail shaker, and a Hawthorne strainer, which is optional. And so each recipe has a tool and the ingredient, as well as the whole, how to do it and all that. Sorry, my head's kind of like, I need the corpse reviver. I do.
It's funny. It was a recipe from a very famous hotel where this was sort of instead of the hair of the dog, it was the whole dog. So the joke was, one corpse reviver will bring you back from the dead, four will send you right back.
Yeah, well, you know, and what's interesting is, too, that people are going to say, well, you know, I don't drink. You know, some of these are, you know, libaceous. I don't drink. But the beauty of the book is that you've got mocktails. So if somebody doesn't drink, you've got the spells and the recipes, both alcoholic and non-alcoholic. And many of the recipes, like the Lady Godiva gratitude spell, you've included sober substitutions for those. And that's great, because nobody's going to miss out. You don't have to like booze to make some of these things.
And it was really important to me to make sure that anyone in recovery was honored in there and where they are. And I've made it very clear, like, there, no one owes an explanation of why they're choosing not to imbibe today or ever. Mm-hmm. So each one, if like the kitchen chapter, there's not a single mention of alcohol in it, because I wanted to make sure there was a clear delineation for anyone who is in recovery that they could avoid it if they needed to. Every single magical use of alcohol has a sober substitution. That way, you get to know the ingredients, and it's not necessarily hinging on whether or not you're choosing to imbibe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like nobody's left out, you know? I mean, that's the good part. Now, I mentioned absinthe in the previous recipe, and people are going to go, you know, because it has kind of a, well, I'm not going to say sinister thing, but people will like, oh, my God, she's talking about absinthe. So you want to talk a little bit about that for a second?
I really do. I really adore absinthe. It's such a magical blend of herbs and botanicals. It is, as a matter of fact, I devote the most word count of any subject in that book to absinthe because it's so deliciously magical. Mm-hmm. It's funny. It got that reputation because it was outlawed for so long. And here in the United States, it was outlawed for 92 years because people thought, oh, if you drink absinthe, it makes you crazy. Mm-hmm. So they outlawed it. And they come to find out now that we have modern science, it wasn't this particular blend of herbs or even the Artemisia absinthium for which it gets its name. It's the fact that they were brewing it in lead bathtubs.
Oh, jeez.
So it's the lead causing that brain damage and those issues and that sinister feel to it, not necessarily the Artemisia absinthium. This particular member of the Artemisia family does contain more of these particular chemicals than the other members of the Artemisia family. These chemicals are called thujones, and they actually act on the same part of the brain as chocolate and THC as marijuana. They mm-hmm. act on that same part of the brain that says, oh, hey, I like whatever this is. We should do this more often. But you're not going to see pink elephants unless you have a little bit before bed and maybe in your sleep. This is not the Dumbo fantasy of, you know, the wish hushed whispers. It's really just that it contains so many herbs. It blends that herbal flavor with the black licorice and fennel, especially. Fennel is a great digestive. So once you put all those individual ingredients together, you get an incredible blend of something that is wholesome. It's actually medicinal. It's the Artemisia absinthium and fennel or a couple other ingredients are actually we'll get rid of worms. We'll get rid of intestinal parasites. They're just really handy plants to have around. So we can use them in our smoke. We can use them in our beverage. And we can use them in our tea. Very handy to have around. One of the other pieces of that puzzle is also when it was when the ban was lifted here in the United States, oh goodness, maybe right around 2010, probably a year earlier, one of the very first distilleries here in the United States that started producing absinthe was in Philadelphia. The Eucare Absinthe is the name of the company. It has a spectacular bottle. So any of the recipes that I've used in the book use Eucare Absinthe, but especially that Corpse Reviver was especially delicious with something called Uncle Val's Botanical Gin. That one's a cucumber-forward gin rather than the traditional juniper. I thought I didn't like gin when I first embarked on this journey, but it turns out I don't like battery acid. Uncle Val's is a gorgeous cucumber-forward gin with sage, lavender, lemon, and it just really brings those botanicals to life. So putting it in a Corpse Reviver, you get this sweet Mediterranean garden in summer feel to it. The lemon juice just brightens it right up. And it's a very nice cocktail to have after a long day. It's very relaxing. It brings your energy back to your center and allows you to put down the things that you've been wondering about all day, the things you've been running around and doing. one of the recipes that I wanted to share was in chapter 4, the getting to know your allies. This is the bishop. It's a money spell. Bishop, get that money. You need 4 ounces of a chilled, dry red wine. Red wine is great for money, recognition in your field, accolades, and inspiration. You get juice of half a lemon for security, focus, and purification, and juice of half of an orange. This is the perfect season for citrus fruits. So it's a great time to do it. Oranges are for abundance, ambition, and dreams. And then just a half an ounce of simple syrup to brighten it up and wake it up. Because simple syrup is mood elevating. All that sugar is just brings that mood right up. It actually goes back to the 18th century. And so anyone you've ever met has enjoyed this before you. but you know you're being empowered. And you know that you are worthy of everything that you work for. Put that ice in a cocktail shaker with some lemon juice and orange juice. Just a little bit of that simple syrup. And shake it till there's some frost on it. While you're shaking, put all that, the desire for recognition and those feelings right into your beverage. Envision that success coming to you. And give it a nice drink. You pour it into your wine glass and have a nice sip. Don't be afraid to experiment with this one. It's really fantastic, and it's something that will get you to the point of putting down your fears and your anxieties and allowing yourself to develop into wholeness. That's what my biggest thing about understanding where we are with this book is, giving you permission to experiment. See these materials, and you gotta let yourself figure it out.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we're gonna figure out something in the next minute or two, because we're gonna take a really quick break, and we'll be back with things that will make you thirsty, things that will make you hungry, and things that are just gonna teach you some good stuff. So we'll be right back.
Don't go away. There's more Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks right after these important messages. From Haunted Road Media comes an exciting new novel by author Marla Brooks, Soul Connection, A Deadly Obsession. Two lost souls, ripped apart by murder in another century, find each other again in the present, only to discover that the murderer has followed them through time. Can their love save them, or will history repeat itself? Find out in this captivating new novel by Marla Brooks, Soul Connection, A Deadly Obsession. Available now on Amazon.com and at BarnesandNoble.com.
You've no doubt heard of Tango and Cash, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, perhaps It Takes Two to Tango. Well now, on the first and third Thursdays of each month, there's a show called Tango and Friends at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network with your host, Bruce Tango. And yes, there will be at least two to tango on each episode, sometimes even more. There's going to be lots of topics and lots of guests you'll all know and lots of surprises. Tango and Friends, every first and third Thursday of the month at 8 p.m. right here on the Para-X Radio Network.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening into Stirring the Cauldron. I just wanted to give you a quick heads up, if you don't already know, about the free weekly Witch's Oracle deck readings that I post on my website every Monday. Now, let me answer the age-old question before you ask it, which is, well, how do I know it's for me? And the answer is pretty simple. If you weren't meant to see it, you wouldn't know it was there. So if you're curious about what the week has in store for you, pop on over to marlabrooks.com every Monday and scroll down on the homepage, and there it will be.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
All right, welcome back, and hopefully some of you went out and had a little potion during the 2 minutes we were gone. My guest is Amy Blackthorne, and we're talking about her new book, Blackthorne's Botanical Brews. We were talking about tools a minute ago, and something I want to bring up too. Another plus is that with the tools, as the ingredients and everything in your recipe, very common things. We don't have to send people out to some nocturne alley to get some of the ingredients for the things in these smells. you know, we've probably got the tools on hand as well as the ingredients. So rather than having to scrounge around for obscure things that nobody has ever heard of, that makes it so much easier. Because don't you hate when you get like a cookbook or something and it's really neat and you open it up and it's, what the hell is that and where am I going to get that? You know, the recipe looks really good until you find that one thing that goes, oh, no. So, yeah, that's the beauty of this book, too. Whatever the recipes, the spells, you've probably got it with you. And just, you know, turn around and there it will be. All right. Now, okay, each recipe, like I said before, has the necessary tools, ingredients, and easy-to-follow recipes. Now, a long time ago, back in the day, I wrote a cookbook, and the publisher insisted on 200 recipes. So it took me a very long time to write the book because I had to make every recipe to make sure they were written correctly, even the ones I didn't care for. So in creating and taste testing yours, I think one of your bigger challenges might have been making the mocktail equivalent to the alcoholic cocktails.
It really is, because of the flavor profile that we encounter. You want it to be as close as you can without either triggering the recess, the part of your brain that says, hey, I want to drink and I shouldn't. You want to give that the energy of it and the association of it without necessarily the same flavor profile. But we've come a long way with things like Ritual is a brand of syrups that are flavored as alcohol, but they do not contain any alcohol. So they're a great base for mixtures that, you know, if you want to replace the vodka or the whiskey, the gin, it's a really great brand that I've been playing with since the book came out. It's a lot of fun to play with these things and try and get that feeling and that energy without necessarily causing any issues for anyone who doesn't necessarily want to or you know, should imbibe. I'm a chronic migraine patient, so for two years I was on a medication that I could not imbibe. So it doesn't really matter why someone chooses not to. It just matters that we are able to honor and include them, especially when we're allowed to have cocktail parties again.
Yeah, one of these days, any year now, it could just happen. There's another question from the chat room about, we're talking about absinthe before the break. Have you ever made your own from scratch? And if so, is making it from scratch even better than the brand that you think is really, really good?
I haven't been able to perfect it to the point where I think it's better than what I can purchase. But I have been able to make infused alcohols that carry a similar flavor. I don't have a distillery in the state where I reside, so that would be very illegal. probably also federally illegal. But I love the way that I can fuse things that were already created for that purpose and give it a nice flavor to it. That the Lillet Blanc that we talked about in The Quirk Survivor, one of my favorite recipes that I've made since researching the book is called a cardamom blush. And the base is Lillet Blanc infused with cardamom pods. Mm. And I'm a sucker for cardamom. It's warm,
oh, yeah.
It's sexy, it just blossoms on your tongue.
Yeah.
And it's just gorgeous. Because I'm allergic to roses, I substitute lavender water instead of rose water.
Okay.
But it's delightful, and that Lillet Blanc really lends itself to being infused with other things. That's one of the reasons I included creating your own vermouth, and because it's so easy, and I had no idea until I started writing this how not just empowering, but really fascinating I thought it was to be able to create vermouth. Like I said about gin, I thought I didn't like it. I don't like what's in the bottle. Most people don't realize that because it's a fortified white wine, once you open it, it needs to be used within a certain amount of time or it's just going to age and be very not good.
Yeah.
So those fabulous green bottles sitting in your bar cabinet probably aren't any good. And
yes, it's yeah. And you, some people don't know any better. I mean, that's what they're used to. So they would think, okay, this is fine. But yeah, fresh is better.
That's why those atomizers you find in the fancy cocktail guides, they're very small, and you just give it your glass a little spritz instead of wasting it in the rinse, because you want to use as much as you can, because it's going to go bad really quick.
Mm. Yeah, see, I didn't know that. I just learned something. Okay, old dog, new tricks. Good. I like that. and, you know, and you just mentioned about making your own vermouth. I really liked the chapter on how to create your own signature drink. And that could be for you as a person or a special holiday. Let's talk a little bit about that, because, you know, usually you just pull things off the shelf, but making your own signature drinks, I think, is very special and magical.
It adds such a layer to, especially an event, because you're giving your guests a story and a piece of yourself. Each beneficial cocktail should have its own backstory, should have even, oh, you know, Muffy and I went to Barbados and we brought this rum back with us and we thought we'd share it with all of you. You know, it's got a story, it's got to live, and it gives people permission to enjoy the ambiance, enjoy the beverages, and mix and mingle. It gives them something to talk about with someone they've never met before. Oh my goodness, did you try this cardamom blush? It's just the die for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's if you were going to make somebody wants to make a signature drink of their own,
mm-hmm.
From their own kind of personality, and of course we're kind of just not talking anybody in particular, but what would they get? Let's say this person was very outgoing. But there was a little shyness there, liked adventure, you know, takes chances. What kind of things might they want to do to put a cocktail together?
My favorite thing to ask someone when we're doing this as an exercise is, what is your favorite color? Because way that people answer that question tells me so much about them. If you tell me your favorite color, I can give you a perfume recommendation. I can make you a cocktail. I can do anything knowing who you are as a person just by how you answer, what is your favorite color?
Wow.
So our theoretical person, their favorite color is green, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But they're bold and they're adventurous. That tells me I should probably get them a tea cocktail so that they can tell the story about they found this tea when they were on safari in wherever.
Mm-hmm.
You can put their very favorite alcoholic beverage in there. You can have tea for the people who are not imbibing that night. You can have the outgoing experience of explaining where each piece was foraged from, where each piece stands in your own personal bank, and you're really relating yourself to the best stories. Don't just take you one-on-one, but allow each person hearing it simultaneously to feel that you're talking directly to them. So that's what you need to incorporate when you're designing your own beverage. So even if it's just a mint tea graced with some really gorgeous gin, like, mm-hmm. it's the process that you went through of designing it that is the story.
Yeah.
So you can take their favorite color, you can take their favorite activity, and you can really make something that speaks to who they are. And when it's a signature cocktail for a person, you can bring it out at every party, and it's not theme dependent.
And you would like holidays would be very simple, to probably easier to create a drink, because you take what the holiday represents and all that stuff. So, all right, let me pick a holiday. Let me think a really strange holiday. a little known holiday. No, I was going to say Samhain. That's, you know, all right. Well, let's go for Samhain, because, you know, what would be like the perfect Samhain cocktail?
So the first thing that people think about when you talk about the holiday itself is probably pumpkins, candy, and fire. Mm-hmm. So you can take the associations of those three things and sort of piece out different things. Give it as much variety as you can, because that allows you to really narrow it down. So if you have a pumpkin chai tea, you can add some bourbon to that and get a little bit of smoke. Yeah. You can have those hot toddies to sit around the bonfire with. You can have a nice candy-infused vodka that lends itself very easily to mixing with. Honestly, just taking half a bag of candy corn and submerging it in a bottle of cheaper vodka makes a very, very interesting party venue.
Yeah.
And then the smoke, you can actually take something like a Lapsang Souchong tea. Mm-hmm. You can get the smoke from that pine fire. Or you can do something like a pine-infused sugar and make yourself your very own martini that way. So you can start with a pine-infused vodka. You can have some pine sugar on the rim and some, perhaps a very jaunty little garnish for that as well.
Ooh, that sounds good. All right. See, I hope I'm not the only one drooling here. You know, it's not age. It's really good stuff. You know, what also you put in a chapter, which was really interesting to me, was what to do with leftover potions. And, I mean, there's so many ways. Like, if you have extra things, you can, like, make offerings to a deity, which is never a bad thing. But you can also have recipes that the leftovers can be used in. And you wrote about a couple of those things. So, like, nothing goes to waste, you know? You can make popsicles, too, for that matter. Anyway, go ahead. Talk a little bit about that.
My Aunt Pat was so funny because I was chatting with her about writing this book, and I said something about leftover wine, and she said, who has wine that's left over? I love adding red wine to the water I boil my pasta in. It helps break down the flours and some of the starches that are inherent in the pasta that gets released into the water. And it actually helps make a beautiful sauce if you can add a little bit of that to your tomatoes, your peppers. It's already got the starches inherent from boiling that pasta in it, so it'll thicken up really nicely. Has a little bit of a sweetness that you just cannot replicate with stock.
You know, you just don't think about things. This is what got me about the book, is that there's so much logic here, things that you overlook, you know. Who would think about, oh, well, I might have leftover potion, you know. I mean, honest to God, it's amazing the things that came into my head that I thought, whoa, why didn't I think of that, you know, or why didn't I give it a thought? I think because maybe we take things at face value at first, and then we get a little deeper, and then we kind of go, oh, yeah. But, you know, like with lavender or whatever the herbs you have, it's not necessarily the potion either, but you might have an overabundance of lavender, say. And you can use that in your cooking. You can use that in your pillow or your sachet or whatever you want to do. So that was another very clever chapter, because I didn't think about it. Now, you also have, as with your other books, a cautionary chapter called A Cautious Witch, Things to Consider. So let's talk a little bit about caution.
When we look at how we practice our magic, it's so easy to get carried away. It's so easy to say, oh, spell jars are the magic of the moment, that they're getting their moment in the sun. And it's so funny because you can do just about anything with them, but should you? When you're incorporating things like alcohol, it's doubly so, because no matter how careful you are, you have no idea what everyone's dealing with, what everyone, the allergies that are inherent. So especially something as specific as absinthe, there's a number of alcohol pieces that are included to that. So fennel and anise, you have no idea of knowing what it is, because unfortunately alcohol doesn't need an ingredients list. So just putting a splash in for flavor, you could absolutely hurt someone completely unintentionally.
Yeah. And you know, allergies, like we were talking about in the beginning, allergies or accidental poisoning and all that stuff is you really need to be forewarned about that. Because, you know, nobody's going to do that on purpose. Usually when people want to kill somebody, they'll get rat poison or something. At least that's how they do it on TV. But well-meaning people sometimes get tripped up, and that's never a good thing. So it's really nice that you put in that kind of chapter in order for people to just kind of see both sides of the coin there.
One of the issues is that people think potion and their brain automatically jumps to poison. And while poisons have historically been included in that realm of potions, I mean, look at the idea of green that most people have. Poison green is part of our vernacular. And it comes for a really singular reason. The really gorgeous dye that was around the early 1900s, the very genesis of the Industrial Revolution, this beautiful, gorgeous green cocktail dresses and this beautiful fabric was dyed with a lethal substance, so much so this arsenic inherent in the fabric that made this beautiful green fabric is enough to kill probably 90 people.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a very interesting story. Please absolutely Google it and find out the history of these pieces. There's one particular museum that has a brooch flower. Ladies who could not afford an entire gown made of this beautiful, lethal fabric got little floral brooches made out of it because it was the cause at the moment. But even that small, beautiful flower could kill an entire room full of people quite easily. It got to the point where just wearing it for an afternoon, these poor women, their kidneys were shutting down. They turned to the green of their dress because their kidneys and their liver were shutting down.
Wow. That's scary. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. And also, let's talk about the botanical brews in the kitchen, because you have a whole list of different things. But let's take, for example, the apple. You have the botanical name. You have the world origin. You've got, the part of the plant used for fruit. Then you talk about magical correspondences, and you talk about herbal lore and uses and practical uses for so many different things. I mean, so comprehensive. And there's, and in the apple thing, there's an apple cider vinegar toner recipe. Talk about the toner.
This is one of my favorite recipes. I started out as a horticulture student in, high school and early college years, trying to figure out how to get my plants to play nicely together, how to use them to their fullest extent, how to use the stems, the roots, the leaves, and make sure that I had, I was as economical as possible because, I was a very poor college student, very poor, and making sure that I was able to use all of those pieces, got me things like steaming facials with rosemary water so I could get rid of blackheads and open up those pores, whiteheads being removed with this beautiful concoction of calendula flowers I made into a mask. So this was one of the outliers from that, was this beautiful apple cider vinegar toner. It's so good for your skin because it's just acidic enough to really clear away anything that's clogging those pores without being so much that it's over drying your skin. Mm-hmm. But it makes a great base because you can put anything in it. You can add lavender or chamomile or rosemary and really tone it and tweak it to what your skin really needs. It can be useful for all ages, and it's such a small amount of the apple cider vinegar to water ratio. It's very, very economical to make.
And the only tool you need is a clean bottle, which is really good. And I mean, there's witch hazel in there. A lot of people have witch hazel for that. You talk about lavender in it, chamomile, hydrosol, and some apple cider vinegar and water. I mean, very simple recipes for very important and really good things to make out of it.
Yeah, I mean, the hydrosol is great by itself. Hydrosols are the byproduct of making essential oils. So 0.02 to 0.03% of dissolved essential oil of chamomile is in that water. So it doesn't necessarily smell exactly like chamomile essential oil, but it's really great for your skin. It's gentle enough that you can use it on your skin without having to dilute it further like you would with an essential oil, because we're always being safe. And that hydrosol is, it's getting a lot easier to find it. There's now countertop distiller kits that you can make your own hydrosols with. Small farms and hobby farms are making hydrosols, so much so that I found a lovely couple at my local farmer's market that's making their own hydrosols for cosmetic use.
Oh, wow. Very cool. You know what? We've been talking for an hour. And
oh, goodness.
Honestly, it's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, there's so much more to the book than we're talking about. And people are going to go, really? Yes, that's true. But since we're out of time, I think you better tell everybody where they can find you and the book and your other books and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. You can find Blackthorn's Botanical Brews, as well as Blackthorn's Botanical Magic and Sacred Smoke, for sale at amyblackthorn.com or blackthornsbotanicals.com. And my brand new book that I'm writing right now, probably out in the late fall, early winter time frame, is a Blackthorn's Protection Magic, a Green Witch's Guide to Self-Defense. That'll be also through Wiser. I'm really excited about this project, and I'm writing as fast as I can.
I'm excited for that, too, because as we were talking about before the show, so many people worry about protection magic and, you know, having people put spells on them and all that stuff. And this is going to be good. It's going to be totally good.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, I know. Hurry up. Finish it up. And then we'll go over and we'll start, you know, poking at Judica to see what she can do to make it go faster. Right? Right.
Exactly.
All right. So anyway, thank you for being here tonight. Like I said, tip of the iceberg, really good book. I enjoyed it. And it's always a pleasure to have you on. And please do come back. And we've got to thank everybody who's listening in as well. And until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited.